I do not think that the classy Brandel Chamblee is going to start spitting. Although he might. I don't know. Listen.
Do us a favor.
Hey, if somebody said that I made my career by denigrating others, I'd be a little bit pissed off. So let's by the way, he's in Scotland. He is in Scotland right now. Playing St. Andrews, and a good friend of the show.
Sucks to be you, too.
It's terrible, right? Nobody breaks down the golf swing like Brandel Chamblee. He is just the numbers, the angles, the data, the metrics. He's really on point. He's a great follow on Twitter as well. Brandel, Tiki, and Tierney, welcome back to the show, buddy. What's happening?
Nice talking to you guys. I'm in St. Andrews. It's no better place to be in the world. I had a fun day in spite of the fact I don't think I denigrated anybody today.
Nice.
I was playing golf.
Nice.
I think I had a pretty good day for me.
Well, what did you shoot there, buddy?
Were you harsh on yourself?
Yeah, I was very harsh on myself. I shot a really smooth running 75. I don't think that's going to get that done. I'm going to have to get a little better if I expect to qualify for the Senior Open.
I love that you're putting yourself out there, man. And we will certainly circle back to that before we hang. I love it. That now,
right.
I think it's awesome. I think it's for those who don't know, Brandel's getting back on the courses and he's playing again. Okay, so the comments by Mickelson. Teak and I spent a good segment on it yesterday. What was your first? I know you put something on Twitter, but what was your initial reaction? Were you surprised at all? What was your first thought when you read that?
Well, my first thought was that it's coincidentally on the heels of his sort of bizarre actions that he's not too happy with some of my comments. You know, I think I got into TV in 2004. So from 2004 to 2014, I think every time I would have talked about Phil Mickelson, it would have been laudatory to the nth degree. But beginning in 2014, specifically at the Ryder Cup, when I would say he denigrated Tom Watson and I think detracted from what should have been a great celebration for the European side and Paul McGinley, that I probably didn't have very many nice things to say about what Phil did in the media center, disparaging Tom in Scotland. And from then, you know, periodically, as it's related to the Ryder Cup, I've had some critical things to say about Phil. And then on the heels of the most bizarre thing I think I've ever seen a legend do at the U.S. Open. So, you know, I just thought it was, you know, it was fitting that, you know, he would have disparaging things to say about me. But my job is really, you know, I mean, you guys know my job. I mean, my job is to analyze and critique the best players in the world. And the nature of human beings is they remember negative comments. They don't remember all the good things you say about them.
Yeah, what are the good things about Phil? Because there's got to be plenty.
That's a great short game.
Of course, right? We see the flop shots. We see the ridiculous things that he does.
Yeah, but I've said for years that Phil's a gift to the game of golf because you couldn't ask for anybody who takes more chances. You know, there was an Arnold Palmer sort of flair to the way Phil played the game. He won often enough where, you know, you could depend on him winning 2, 3, 4 tournaments a year. And he lost tragically. He won heroically. And he was usually pretty gracious with his time with the media. So there are a lot of great things about Phil. I mean, the game's been very exciting with Phil Mickelson in the game. He's proved to be a pretty good foil. I would never call him a rival to Tiger Woods, but he was a pretty good foil for Tiger Woods. So he's made the game far more interesting than it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, totally agree. Brandel Chamblee is with us here on Tiki and Tierney. You know, Phil, at one point when the and a foil is a great way to phrase it because – rivals probably giving Phil a little bit, much like VJ and David Duval, a few others for a minute, they were in Tiger's path, and then he just stomped all over him before he got hurt. Nobody really stood up to Tiger. We know that historically. But I've always been a Phil guy, and there was a point, Brandel, where you had to make a choice. You're either Tiger or you're Phil, and I went to Phil quickly. I play left-handed. I love his style, you know, going for it. And when you go for it, sometimes it's going to be brilliant, and sometimes it's going to be brutal to watch. And I appreciate the humanism in his game. But I got to tell you this, because I know you and I interact on Twitter a little bit, and I think that you know that I know the game a little bit, and I know people within the game, and I know people within the game. The public Phil, is very different from the private Phil. Can you expound on that, or am I wrong with that?
Well, I mean, the public loves Phil, that's for sure. But there is an edge to Phil, you know, and he is. He's working an angle. He's a smart guy. You know, if he doesn't like an architect like Reese Jones, he'll make, you know, snide little comments about Reese Jones. If he doesn't like the way a tournament's run, he'll make comments. If he doesn't like the FedEx Cup, he'll make comments about it. I'm pretty sure that's why there's a week sort of sabbatical in the middle of the FedEx Cup. I'm pretty sure the reason that the WGC match play has round robin is because Phil was fairly vocal about it. You know, Phil's a powerful guy in the world of golf, and if he doesn't like something, he's pretty quick to say it in however way he can say it, and pretty soon after it, he can direct change in the game of golf. So, you know, the people that can be influenced in the game of golf listen to Phil because, you know, he's a powerful guy. He's a bright guy, but there's a Machiavellian nature to him, and you know, as affable as he can be when fans are around, he could be a tough guy.
You know, Brando, you came on, you know, I think you said 2004 is when you first started doing television. So it's been 14 years. And I think in that 14 years, the viewing audience of golf has changed and it's evolved a little bit. Like BT was talking about when we had this discussion yesterday, how golf is, you know, a gentleman's sport and, you know, it's got to be it's snobbish, or sometimes analysts can come off as snobbish. But when you think about who's watching golf right now, don't you have to be critical, but also very exuberant in praise as well? Because like the boring, you know, Stead, oh, you know, that was a great shot by him, don't you think? That doesn't work anymore, right?
Nope. Boring.
Well, by the time I come on the air, by the time our show, you know, Live From, comes on the air, you think about it. I mean, the golf's been on in the morning. Mm-hmm. There's usually a morning show.
Yeah.
There's 8 hours of golf, say, at a major championship. Everything that could possibly be said about golfers or golf shots, you'd think would have been said.
Yeah.
So our challenge as we sit there all day long is to think, what hasn't been said? What can we tell the audience that is not obvious? So, yeah, our audience is very knowledgeable. They don't watch this game sort of obliquely. They're all in on it, and they're watching it for themselves to get better. And they are all in on the stats. And so, yeah, you have to dive in deep. Our audience is knowledgeable, and that's our job, is to watch it and to be as critical as we can and to dive as deep as we can into the statistics and the analysis and the swing, and then share it in an impactful way. And most of the time, it's pretty good-natured stuff because it is just golf.
Yeah, and here's the episode of Brandel Chambly, of course, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Brandel's out in Scotland, just wrapping up St. Andrews, 75. We got to get a little bit better on the green there, Brandon. Shave a few strokes off, buddy. You know what I mean?
That's said with the utmost jealousy, Brandon.
100% jealous. I'd take a 75 on the local muni. But, you know,
the gentleman I was playing with, though, hold out on the 18th hole.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he did. And then, you know, there's a pretty big crowd, so everybody was cheering. And we walked up there. Ernie Els was on a balcony overlooking the green. And he was like, who is this guy you were playing with, Brandon? I said, there's at least one person in the group that can play. I know that. So it was a great moment for him.
I hope he bought you a beer. I hope he bought you a beer and everybody else won as well.
They're drinking. They're drinking. Speaking of holding out, Rich, Brandon, Rich Lerner's show the other night was phenomenal on the Golf Channel. About Van de Velde's, did you get an advanced copy? Get a chance to see that, because I wanted to run something by you there.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the great things, you know, is that I love Rich, you know, and I just dive in deep on his you know, essays. So yeah. I watch his stuff. My wife loves to read, so we'll come back, and his turns of phrases are great. His way to dive into a story is great. So. Yeah, it was tremendous.
Okay, so what I didn't know...
John Van de Velde is amazing.
Yeah, and he, listen, he's such a dignified guy, and he seemingly has recovered very well from one of the...
He has.
You know, he seems like he's in a good place. What I didn't know, though, because that's when I was just getting into golf, I didn't know that Laurie said to John, hey, right as he was melting down when they were both in the bunker on 18 at Carnoustie, hey, compose yourself in so many words, I paraphrase, take your time, if you want me to go, I'll go. And then the guy holds out. Talk about amping up the pressure. I did not even realize that happened. How crazy is that?
Right. And, you know, actually, when I was watching it and I saw Van de Velde make the putt for triple bogey, and no one's ever reacted so animated after making a putt for triple bogey, but I thought he thought that he had won it. I thought that he had lost track of the score. So I thought there's no way he has that reaction. you know, it happened almost 20 years ago, and we're all sort of still spellbound by what we saw. And there are so many mysteries. What I'd love to see, you know, is exactly the railing and a slow motion video of that ball. I mean, it was just such a terrible break, and the guy gets so much grief for what people will say is a dumb play. And it was like, no, it was the worst break in the history of golf, hitting that railing.
Totally.
Yeah.
He would have gotten a free drop.
Yeah, you're right.
He would have gotten a free drop, and you know what everybody would have said? Huh. What a brilliant play it was. It's like, you know, the difference between success and failure, you know, the difference between called being brilliant and a dumbass is just whether or not it comes off.
Yeah,
that's true.
And
that's
everybody
true.
Likes to say, oh, you know, he went down like a Frenchman, whatever that means, and, you know, it was a stupid play. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's the worst break in history.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's a good point. Hey, Brandel, before we let you go, we keep hearing these rumblings of this $10 million match between Phil and Tiger. Is it a good thing, or is it too contrived?
Well, I think it'll get an audience, certainly. I mean, you guys are historians. Y'all probably remember the Shell's Wonderful World of Golf. It had a nice run. People still talk about Sam, Steve, Matt Hogan playing each other back in the mid-60s, which eventually led to the PGA Tour champions. It did. It led to that tour because of the popularity of that little get-together. So, you know, the Phil-Tiger thing, if you think about it, it never really happened with the exception of 1 week at Doral.
Yeah.
You know, back, I think, around 2005, they had a good go. Phil almost chipped in on the last hole to tie Tiger Woods, and that's it. So all those rivalries that we wanted to see between Tiger and Phil, they never happened. So everybody's still hungry for Tiger-Phil against each other. Yeah, the problem is they actually like each other now. So
they do.
Not going to have the animosity that we would like to have between the two. And then, you know, Tiger-Sergio, yeah, I think that would be pretty interesting. But Tiger-Phil right now, yeah, I think people will watch it. You know, but it would mean nothing. I mean, you know, we already know who the best golfer is, and on any given day, Tiger can beat Phil, or Phil can beat Tiger, and you know, it would mean nothing. It would just be about entertainment.
And they have more.
You know, they're no longer at their peak anymore.
And they both have more money than God, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like a $5 Nassau for me and Tiki for those guys. It's not even their money though.
When Hogan and Snead played, it was $3,000 to the winner and $2,000 to the loser.
That's amazing.
$1,000 difference. Wow. It meant a lot to them.
God. All right, so in summation, Brandel, because everybody driving around, and I'm sure this will get a little play nationally here, you bump into Phil on the range at the next event. You walk by him, you shake his hand, what happens? He is a black belt,
look,
by the
Phil
way.
Phil and I have a lot of the same friends. You know, some of his best friends are some of my good friends. So we have a lot of mutual friends. And I'd say, hey, Phil, how are you? Good to see you. You know, Phil's not one of those guys that is abrasive face to face. You know, he would like to sit down and you know, if I saw him, I'd say, first of all, La La Land was a terrific movie.
That's good. That was in the article. Yep, I got you. That's good.
First of all, La La Land was a terrific movie. I think you've lost your mind that you think that was a bad movie, but just because it didn't have a happy ending, you know.
Yeah.
Second of all, you know, what's your beef, and what do you think is denigrating about what I've done specifically? You know, my job is to analyze most of the time, and I could get Phil a tape, and I promise you, I could get him a 10-hour tape of me going on and on and on about how good he is for the game of golf.
I've heard it.
You know, I think he was a little hyperbolic there, and I think I would clearer heads would prevail.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could convince him of that.
Okay, and then he gives you a karate chop to the temple, and Brandel hits the deck, and he's a black belt, and so you better be careful. Hey, listen, I know you haven't done a lot of interviews since this, so we appreciate you calling in from Scotland. Really good stuff, Brandel. Thanks for hopping on, buddy.
Yeah, happy to. Always enjoy talking to you guys. Look forward to watching the Open next week. Give me a shout.